White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 262.
Fear arising that one could time travel within his own lifetime, Dr. Sam Beckett stepped into the Quantum Leap Accelerator and vanished. He awoke to find himself trapped in the past, facing mirror images that were not his own, and driven by an unknown force to change history for the better. His only guide on this journey is Al, an observer from his own time, who appears in the form of a hologram that only Sam can see and hear. And so Dr. Beckett finds himself leaping from life to life, striving to put right what once went wrong, and hoping each time that his next leap will be the leap home.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
And welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined again by Jared Albrick, art director for White Rocket Books and inker on the awesome upcoming Cole Lightning graphic novel series that we are working on. Welcome back aboard, Jared.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very excited. We're doing two TV shows now, and we're kicking off our coverage of the second one. We did an episode about Babylon 5. We covered, I guess, the pilot, The Gathering, and then like the first two episodes, I believe. And tell the folks what we're digging into now.
Tonight, we are going to step into the Quantum Leap Accelerator and vanish into the wonderful world of Quantum Leap. I was really thrilled to get into Babylon 5 with Van, being it's Van's favorite thing, and now Van is stepping into my favorite thing, Quantum Leap.
Okay. I have lots of questions and critiques and things to dig into about it, but I have no specific notes, so I figure it's just going to happen organically because I'm going to let you kind of take the wheel and lead us through these four episodes, or like the introduction, pilot, and then three more.
Right, yeah, it's considered four episodes. I think when they initially aired the pilot, they split it into two, even though it's really meant to be watched as one. I don't have a good memory of that because I really found Quantum Leap later on. But you know what? We'll talk about how we found Quantum Leap.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you how I did. I watched a couple of episodes when it was originally airing, and I wasn't really sure what to make of it. And there were two things. One, and I want to get into that a little bit as we talk about it, one of the things was I never completely understood the premise. And I honestly felt like they were so determined to cover that week's story that they never gave me enough of the backstory. I mean, they just barely touch on it. I knew that Dr. Yue from Dune was running around with an iPhone, and nobody could see him, and I knew that Captain Archer was like not who he looked like, and one of the episodes I saw, I swear it was Driving Miss Daisy before the Driving Miss Daisy movie came out, because when Driving Miss Daisy came out, I was like, that was a Quantum Leap episode. I'm almost sure.
There have been some very similar Quantum Leap episodes to famous movies, and most of the time that's by design. Now, I'm not sure about the order of events between the Driving Miss Daisy movie and the episode. I have to look into that, but that is pretty interesting.
I could have sworn it came out like a good year or two before the movie did, because when that movie came out, I'm like, I've seen this before. But anyway, So I never felt like I really understood the premise. And here's the weird thing now. I was one of the reasons I was really excited, one of several reasons that I was very excited to get to start it from the very beginning with you and watch it, was that I was finally going to understand. And, you know, I understand about 10% more than I did before.
Really?
I
would have put you at about 80% at this point.
They just don't give you much. It's all about the plot. It's all about the current plot. The overall situation, they really haven't put hardly any energy into yet. So I'm still puzzled.
That's almost the beauty of the show.
Okay.
Is that it goes 5 seasons.
Okay.
And I think it's very much by design that they just give you the bare minimums of what's going on. And every once in a while, pretty well spaced out, we'll get a glimpse of what actually is going on.
Yeah.
Back at the ranch, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the project. And you'll learn a little more. And to me, that's kind of the overarching beauty of this series. I make no bones about it. This is my favorite television series of all time, much like Babylon 5 is yours. The beauty of it is that we take this long journey to tell actually a very short and very beautiful story. But I will admit that something you've already alluded to, Quantum Leap is a show designed for people that took the ride the entire time. It is not a great show for a middle jump on.
Hmm. Well, a couple of the things about it, and then I want to go into let you go ahead and lead us through the episodes and we'll discuss them. But I just have some thoughts up front I just kind of want to get out before I forget. One is that in addition to me still not completely understanding the situation, because, again, they didn't give us a lot of backstory. When the first episode starts, it's in action. Things are already happening. Things have already happened. And you're just given some background kind of in dialogue. But the one other issue I'm having with it, I'm trying to understand, I'm just wrestling with it and trying to understand, is that in some episodes, Sam, right?
Correct.
In some episodes, he goes into somebody's body and he seems to have no clue where he is, who he is, what he's supposed to do, who anybody is around him, and he's totally lost. Like, I don't know how to fly a plane. I don't know what I'm doing. Oh my God, we're going to die. Other episodes, he comes into the bodies and he seems to like know what he's supposed to be doing as that person and know the people around him. And I kind of get confused by that.
I don't know a whole lot of episodes where that happens, where it's almost always as far as I can remember, I can't remember any episodes where he doesn't have to spend a little time finding his footing. Now, sometimes he finds it faster than others. And as you learn, that's kind of part of the quantum leaping process, is that, remember, they talk about the Swiss cheese memory, and it's like his consciousness, his memory moves into this new body, and the person that was in that body moves into his body, which is back at Project Quantum Leap.
I was wondering that. They never said that. I never knew what happened to the other person.
I'm giving away so much. They alluded to it, because at one point Al said, and I think it was in the first episode, he said, the guy that we have back in the imaging chamber looks like you. And okay. So, yeah, they switch kind of consciousnesses, and they actually keep little parts of each other's. So while he's like 95, 96% Sam, he's got about 3 or 4% of the memory of the person that he's in.
Well, that helps.
As we'll talk about in the first episode, he didn't get the important part, which was how to fly an airplane.
Right. Well, see, but that helps a lot, because like the example I'm thinking of is the last one from this batch is where he's on the farm as a vet, and he seems to know what he's doing with animals, and he seems to know all the cowboys, and he seems to know how to ride a horse, and he seems to know who this woman is, and I'm like, why is he not wandering around going, who are you people?
Podcast.
Do what now?
So that episode won't be included on this podcast. That one's going to be in the next podcast.
I thought we were doing the first four.
Well, and this is where it gets confusing, because the first one counts as two.
Oh,
the first one was like
okay.
One and two.
Okay.
So, right. Yeah, you're ahead of me then. I haven't watched the
however you want to do it
episode.
Okay.
But I can tell you this. Don't worry. It'll make it easier for you to make your time mark today.
Okay. Sure.
I can tell you this. Sam, as he moves along, like in that first episode, he remembers very little about who he was before. He will start collecting more and more memories and realizing more of his actual abilities. And I don't want to give too much away as to what we'll learn about Sam as we go along. But Sam is at, you know, I think they've already revealed this. Yeah, they did in the first episode. He's actually a medical doctor.
Yeah.
So you know, being a vet won't be terribly tough for him.
Okay. All right. Well, it's also never quite clear exactly to me what he's trying to do. It's kind of like once, and I don't mean to be critical, I'm just trying to understand it because I'm enjoying the stories. I just want to kind of understand the larger, you know, the larger thing here is that he suddenly appears in a body kind of in media res, as they say, and stuff's going on. He has to figure it out on the fly, and he's trying to do something, and when he does it, he gets to go on and be in the next body, but it's kind of like they already, by the second episode, they already know that's what's happening. And I'm like, well, how did they figure out that that's what he's doing? How did they figure out why? How did they figure out where he's going and what he's supposed to do? And as a corollary to that, when I'd seen it before, they kept talking about Ziggy, and they would never say who or what Ziggy was. And so if you don't know from the beginning that I guess it's the computer...
That's correct.
Then you would think it's some other guy that Dr. Yui is arguing with, and I'm just like, I don't understand. So that's kind of puzzling to me too.
Well, and again, it's not a great show to jump on in the middle of, but half the fun of every episode is figuring out what he needs to do to leap. And what Ziggy does is a supercomputer back home, and it basically tells Al, you know, based on what we know in this person's life in this time period, we think because they kind of figured out early on that he's there to put right what once went wrong. He's fixing small problems, small gaps in history. And the computer basically says, okay, based off of where you're at and who you are, we think this is probably the thing that went wrong that you need to fix. And most of the time, Ziggy's right, but sometimes Ziggy's wrong. And that's where a lot of the fun episodes will come in.
Okay. Well, I don't still know how they know that, but okay. But
they go through Ziggy's like this supercomputer that goes through all these historical records.
So far, I haven't gotten the sense that he's in any hurry to go back home. But other times, I've gotten the impression that he's trying to get back home.
Well, we haven't. He hasn't realized some things yet.
Okay, all right.
That I don't want to give away too much, but he hasn't realized some things. Like right now, he doesn't realize he has some pretty big reasons for going home.
Oh, okay, all right. So right now, he's just kicking around enjoying it.
He is. Like, he's figured out that there's some very salient points that I will make to you, much like you do for me for Babylon 5. I'll plant some seeds with
you. Okay, good.
Like, keep an eye on this and keep an eye on that. And
very good.
Like I said, though, at the end of the day, you know, if we make it through all five seasons, and I really hope we do, you're going to see that this is one of the simplest dang stories. It's Quantum Leap ends up being what I like to call beautiful simplicity. And I like beautiful simplicity in comics, and I love it in movies, and I love it in my video games. I like games that are very simple but just gorgeous in their simple message. And that's the ride we're going to take.
Well, I got to tell you, there's only been two shows that I've heard people complain about the ending more, and that's Seinfeld and Battlestar Galactica.
I've heard people complain about the ending of Lost more than anything else.
Oh, well, that's true, but I never watched it. I meant shows I actually watched. But you're right,
I didn't either. And I will say this. We will preface this five seasons before we even get there. People who complain about the final episode did not get the show.
Okay.
We'll take this journey together, and I think you'll get it. And if you don't, I will absolutely spoon-feed it to you, and I know that I can make – everybody I've ever talked to who said, I hate the last episode, when I explain it to them, I see the light bulb go on, and they go, oh, my gosh. And I go, yeah.
Well, see, I really loved the last episode of Battlestar Galactica, and I know people can't stand it. So now I have no defense of Seinfeld. That was horrible.
I never had a problem with the last episode of Seinfeld. People got upset about it, but I was just like, it just is what it is. I really thought it was cool how they bookended the series, so they ended the series on the same joke that they started the series with. A lot of people missed that.
Yeah, yeah.
At the very end, where he says, you know, that button's in the worst possible place. It's the very first conversation he and George have in the first episode. Oh, I thought geez. That was...
One other thing I noticed is that this is Don Belisarius' production, and he's, of course, the guy that works with Glenn Larson to do the original Battlestar Galactica. So,
he made one of my other favorite shows. He's the powerhouse behind Magnum PI.
Ah, he's done quite a diverse collection of things. This show is kind of halfway between Battlestar Galactica and Magnum, I guess, in a way, right?
And you know what? A lot of people complain about the final episode of Magnum, which I also thought was really good.
Interesting. Okay. And one other thing I want to point out about it. They've got some awesome guest star ladies already. I mean,
yes.
Just in the one or two, three, four, five episodes I've watched so far, We Got It Made, what's her name? Mickey something, which I had recognized from 30 years ago. And I'm like, and we had Terry Hatcher when she was very young and cute. And we had this lady that's the cowgirl. Holy cow. So no pun intended.
I haven't watched that one yet, so I have to keep an eye out.
It's been top shelf all the way through. I've been very impressed, so...
Yeah, you'll get some fun ones along the way.
Very good.
That's the beautiful thing about Quantum Leap is, you know how like you can look back on a lot of series and go, "Oh, that was a bad episode." I can't find a bad one. Even like the worst ones are like still good.
So that's good.
I know I'm tainted, but
there's no episode where an organic alien tech takes over a guy and starts blowing up.
I didn't think that was a bad Babylon 5
episode. I got to tell you, I've gone ahead and watched a few ahead because I love Babylon 5 so much. I'm going to go back and start back with you again, but I've kind of zipped on ahead because I'm enjoying the first season so much. I hadn't watched the first season of Babylon 5 in ages. There's later episodes that are big boom episodes that I've watched like they were a movie or something, you know, or like they were the Borg episodes of Star Trek or something. There's that kind that are coming, obviously. But the first season is very quiet for that show, but I hadn't watched it in so long that I'm really digging those early ones. And so I've enjoyed kind of going back and I have discovered at least one or two that are, in my opinion, worse than Infection. So worse than an Infection, in fact.
Well, and the fun thing about this ride, and I'll do the quick story of how Jared came to Quantum Leap because it'll tie into what I'm about to say. It's rather simple. I lived in Germany. I was an army brat. I lived there from 87 to 90. Mm-hmm. And in that time in Germany, you only got one station. The armed services provided you with Armed Forces Network, AFN, and as they dared to call it, the superstation. And we jokingly called it the only station. And so it was just one channel. So it was very highly selective about what got played. It was a hodgepodge of ABC, CBS, and NBC. But you only had one channel. And Quantum Leap was coming out just as I moved back to the States. And so, like, all kinds of TV was new to me. Like, because I wouldn't even see you don't get commercials there either. Hmm. So you don't even know, like, what else is on. So I got back and I was like, and I was about 13 or 14 years old, and I found this show and I was just like, this is so cool. I just really like it. And I got hooked on it and I watched it all the way. I probably jumped on somewhere mid season one or maybe into season two, and I watched all the way to the end and just fell in love with it. And then I got the DVDs when they first came out, gosh, probably, I don't know, 10 years ago. And I watched them all then, and said, and it was funny because I bought that show, and the other big show that came out when I came back from Germany was The Flash, the Flash TV show from the 90s, right. From 90. And I bought all those on DVD. I was like, these were my favorite shows, and I watched The Flash, and frankly, it didn't hold up. And I was just like, nah, I'm good on The Flash. I don't need to watch that again. And I was so scared when I popped in Quantum Leap. I was like, oh gosh, is this going to hold up too? And I loved it more when I went through it again. And that was, like I said, about probably 9 or 10 years ago. I haven't watched it since then.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of fun for me, too. This is coming back. But I do remember a lot of the salient points.
Cool.
So I'm happy to take us through it.
Well, let's get into the pilot, and then we'll do a break and come back and do the last two.
All right. You're in charge. So no, that's fine with me.
No. You're in charge, so fire it off.
Oh, goodness. I don't know what to do with my hands. All right. The Quantum Leap pilot, which I believe was called Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, intended to be one Genesis episode. If you don't mind, if it's not too much putting you on the spot, how would you feel about just giving us, you know, the 30-second plot summary of Genesis 1 and 2?
All right. Well, let's see. It was obviously the first one I watched. It's been a couple of weeks, so let me try to think back. So at the beginning, he's in this machine and he's like cackling with glee like Dr. Doom as he gets sent somewhere in time, and he ends up as a I forget how he first appears, but he's an Air Force pilot out in the, I guess in Florida, right? It's either in the Southwest or in Florida. I forget where.
He is in the Southwest. It is actually where they did the test flights for the supersonic jets. Out in the Southwest.
And they're trying to perfect the supersonic plane, and they're having trouble with it, like it's making the fuel boil and stuff like that. And at one point he gets behind the wheel of it, basically, and he doesn't know how to fly it, and he's freaking out. And they, I think more in the pilot than in any, no pun intended, than in any other episode, at least the ones of the other three that I've seen so far, in that one, what they really emphasize, they hit hard, constantly, they hit hard on him not knowing what he's doing, him having to talk to Al, or Dr. Huey, as I've been calling him, Dean Stockwell, I like him, he'll always be Dr. Huey. They hit hard on the setup, right? Because it's the pilot, so they really hit hard on the setup. The later episodes, they've barely mentioned. It's gotten less and less as I've gone along, I think, in other words. But they really play hard on the idea that he doesn't know where he is, he doesn't know these people around him, and he doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing. He's got a wife and a little boy, I believe, and they're trying to figure out if he's lost his mind. He's talking to himself when he talks to Al. Like I say, they kind of give that a rest mercifully after this. But for this first episode, there's a lot of why are you talking to yourself, you know, and why don't you seem to know the things you normally know and all that. So I am kind of glad they give that a rest after a couple of episodes, because you don't want to go through five seasons, I'm thinking, of every episode him having to say, oh, I wasn't talking to myself. I'm just, you know, talking to my
get ready, because it's going to happen a lot.
Yeah, well, great.
And it's going to be half the fun of it. In fact, I got a note on it, but I'll hit that
okay.
later.
So I guess, I mean, yeah, so ultimately he kind of makes a discovery, and then I can't even remember exactly how it ends, except that he wins his wife back, basically, and gets
the
lead.
Yeah, she ended up going into premature labor.
Yeah, that's right. And he knew what to do.
His doctor skills kicked in.
Yeah, he knew what to do to keep her from having the baby too soon. And,
that's right.
And then he saved the baby's life, and they have the baby, and everything's cool. That's right.
And then he left, which is an interesting tip off the first episode, is Ziggy thought he was there to successfully break the sound barrier.
Right.
But he was there to save that baby.
And
so that's your first hint that Ziggy, although sometimes will be right, sometimes will be wrong. And it'll be a fun adventure as we learn, as we go down to more episodes, and Sam kind of has to trust his gut on some things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you're right. Saves the baby. He leaps out of I'll take it from here. He leaps, he leaps out of the test pilot and leaps into a minor league baseball player in Texas. After he leaps into the body of the minor league baseball player, he's trying to kind of figure out what he's there to do. And he realizes that he's still in a year where his father is still alive, and that part of his memory actually came back. He remembered his old phone number, and you get just I was floored, because you're going to get every once in a while these really powerful emotional scenes, and that scene where he gets to call his dad.
Oh yeah,
woo, that gets me every time.
Sure thing.
And I was like, man, that was in the pilot. Like when I watched it, I was like, good gravy. Because, I mean, it's just – this is one of the things that the show does really well. The show – basically every episode falls into one of three categories. You've got the just straight-out fun adventure episode. You've got the episode that has to do much more poignantly with Sam's life, as we'll see in the second one that we're about to talk about, in the episode that follows the pilot. And then you get ones that are just have a lot of raw emotion in them. And they gave us that right off the bat. The first one is actually kind of a combo of straight up adventure, and then you get that scene where he calls his dad.
Right.
And they're just like, "Woo, yeah, that's I get my allergies act up every time I watch it." But so anyway, yeah, he gets that. That was a fun part where he plays the baseball, and he ends up having to win that game, and I thought it was very it gave you a little tip to the comical nature of the show, too, on how he won it, because everybody kind of expects Sam Beckett to go up there and just belt a home run and win the game. But I suppose you remember how he won it.
Well, he struck out, didn't he? But something else happened.
He struck out, and the catcher dropped the ball on third pitch, which allows, allows him to make the run. And then there was like two or three infield errors.
Yeah.
They kept overthrowing their guy that allowed him to get
bases
and make the run, which allowed him to move on and leap. And that's actually, even though it seems a little goofy, you're going to kind of pick up on a theme. There's some bigger themes. So if it's all right with you, I'll move through my little points list, my little notes list on the pilot, and then we'll just get you just kind of chime in on thoughts. Is that all right for you?
Do
you want to do that after the break?
No. We'll do that for the other two episodes. I want to just cover the pilot, and then we'll do that. But
okay.
But I did want to my one critique about this episode. I did like that it tried to kind of explain everything, and it kind of hit hard on, like I said, on the main points of what the show is all about. I felt like the pilot part kind of dragged on too long. I was ready for him to do something else. I was very glad we went to the baseball thing, even though that was kind of short, because it just seemed like they could have made the whole piloting thing a little more concise.
But, yeah, it is an imbalanced episode.
It's
a 90 minutes when it plays together.
Right.
And it's about an hour of pilot.
Yeah.
And maybe 30 minutes of baseball.
Yeah, but it was good. I just felt like I had a little more of that than we needed. They could have been a little more concise. But okay, so go ahead.
Sure. All right, just going down my notes. I don't pick on my own favorite shows very much. One of the things I always thought was kind of weird is at some point I believe they revealed that Sam was born in 1952, I think.
Okay.
And you look at him and you can tell he's maybe 40, 45 years old. Let's say he's 45.
Okay.
So that means he leaps from the Quantum Leap Accelerator in 97.
Okay.
And keep in mind that the show is being made in like 89, 90. So it's the not too distant future.
Right.
But I always thought they just went, when you do get glimpses of their quote unquote 1997, like it's a very sparkly neon. Al's car is all neon. The girl wears light up jewelry. I think that was Tina.
He mentions Tina in the last episode I watched.
Yeah, Tina comes up from time to time, and as, if you haven't figured this out already, Al is quite the ladies.
And there's
going to be a lot of humor derived from that, but put a pin in that because that's going to become important later on.
A thousand deaths are not enough for Yui. I know. Go with it.
God, I haven't seen Dune in like 15 years, man.
Lucky you. Lucky you.
Oh, goodness. Muhadib. That's all I remember.
His name is a killing word.
I think that's my only downside is I was like, they just went way too futury, like in the styles that Al wears. I'm just like, come on, guys. It's basically eight or nine years from when you're filming. You really think style's going to change that much?
Well, they kind of took what the 80s were like and then pushed them to the extreme.
Yeah.
But, of course, what happens is decades don't do that. Decades completely change. So they needed to pick the whole different style rather than just doing super exaggerated 80s like everybody's Madonna on neon, you know.
Yeah, if we learn nothing else from Ridley Scott and Blade Runner, it's that in the future, people wear clothes. Just clothes. doesn't have to be something.
Right.
It doesn't need to be a character. It's just people wear clothes. That's really my only, like, I thought that was just kind of odd. The only downside is that sort of super neon-y future. And I'll be up front with you, you're not going to see a whole lot of the future. I mean, 98% of this show is going to. Mm-hmm. Just take place in Sam's situations. So let's get to the good stuff. I think maybe more than any show I've ever seen before for a pilot episode, I think that Bakula just finds the character real fast.
Mm-hmm.
No one plays fish out of water befuddled better than Bakula, because he's going to be asked to do it again and again and again.
Yeah.
And so I kind of kept an eye on that. I was like, is he going to be good at that in the first episode? And I think he really was. And Dean Stockwell also found his character pretty fast. So I think it does better than most shows in finding character early.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to tell more of that as time goes on, obviously. Some things I liked about the Air Force portion of things, being a prior service Air Force guy, obviously I had a critical eye on it. I think they captured the way that pilots act pretty well. pilots act today pretty much the same way they did in the 50s. And more importantly, I think they really captured aviators' wives as well, because my father was an Army aviator, and I've seen how wives act, and I've seen particularly, you know, when there's a crash and they all kind of panic but yet come together. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in my real life, and it's obviously not pleasant, but they did a good job with it on the show.
That's cool.
Downside of the show, I do have one of the downside. Like, when he first gets control, the first time he flies, it's not when he flies the supersonic. He's flying the mothership plane, which is a large bomber-style plane. And he takes over and just immediately starts, like, this hard bank left nosedive thing. And I'll be honest with you, flying a plane straight and level is not hard. And I could put you in the cockpit tomorrow, Van, and you could fly straight and level without any problem. You're not going to start doing some crazy...
I suspected as much.
Crazy time. It's pretty much flies itself. Yeah. But other things that I thought are great about the show that we're going to keep seeing over and over again are some really neat sort of historical cues. Like in that one, they showed the old they had the old shaving cream ads and mm-hmm. the Howdy Doody show. They talked about how there was no road striping. They hadn't painted stripes on the road at this time.
Yeah, that blew my mind. I remember
neat
that.
Neat little things that kind of blow your mind. They go, oh, yeah, because they always find little things that are historically accurate.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, that's kind of a neat. You're like, I didn't really think about that. So I thought that was cool. And dude, we talked about the lovely ladies of Quantum Leap, but Bruce McGill in the first episode, great character actor.
Oh yeah, you'll be seeing him on another show we're watching.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you'll be seeing him again on this show, but it's going to be a long, long time. He's going to play a real important person.
Interesting.
But hey, that's all I'm giving you.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about the Swiss cheese memory device that they entered into the first episode. And like you said, they hit it pretty hard. He's very confused about not only who he is in that time, but who he is kind of period.
Right.
And he'll pick up a little bit more here and there along the way. But I think that's a real neat device. Like I said, this whole show does a good job of really pacing out, giving you just little niblets along the way to start filling in the picture. And you're already feeling that. You've expressed that you're still kind of hungry for more. And it's coming, but it's going to come at maybe a maddeningly slow pace for you.
It's kind of the polar opposite of what Babylon 5 did, which was say, here's the encyclopedia of our universe, blam! And you're like, ah!
Yeah, Babylon 5 hit me with the fire hose.
Yes.
I'm giving you a faucet that's dripping slowly.
Exactly. Couldn't be two more different things. But, that's really interesting.
And that's how I prefer a lot of things. That's how I prefer my comic books and pretty much all my nerdery. I like sort of slow... developing, making connections. Ah, I see this, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
But, just going back to my notes. I thought it was interesting. Maybe I really love this show because the pilot has the military connection, the Air Force connection. Sam is originally from Indiana. I'm from Indiana.
Yeah.
So I think I just personally am wrapped up in this show. But, we talked. I have in my notes about the phone call with his father. And as I was watching, I remember I texted you. I was like, oh, crap, that scene with his dad.
Yep.
Woo, when he made that phone call. I'm sure you caught it, but I think the show did a real good job of sort of explaining the rules of time travel when they do the string theory.
You got to help me there.
Okay. Al first explains it to Sam, and it'll get explained a few more times throughout the series. The string theory of their time travel is that your life is like a string, birth on one end, death on the other. You tie the ends together, it makes a loop, and then you ball it up in your fist. And all the places where the strings touch are moments that you can leap to.
Oh.
And so that's why he's just going to kind of be all over the map. And I thought that was just kind of a good kindergarten-y way to explain it to the audience, and I thought, oh, that's simple, and it makes sense, you know.
That's a very
my time travel experience.
That's a very, very timey-wimey Doctor Who thing going on there.
Take your word for that. I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, but there's – we're going to have to take a break at some point coming up in a few weeks or months, and you're going to have to watch the three – absolutely essential Doctor Who's. I mean, every time I tried to watch Doctor Who, I could not get it at all. I watched what's his name? The bald-headed guy. I can't even think of his name now.
Telly Savalas.
No, Jesus, yes. From Thor, The Dark World. Anyway, And I just couldn't get it. And I tried watching a Tenet, and I couldn't get it. And I tried watching Matt Smith, couldn't get it. I started the very beginning with Mira, and we just started watching it from the beginning. And oh my gosh. But there are three episodes that David Tennant did back to back to back. Two of them are two-parter. One is a standalone. They're unbelievable. And it just there's a part in it where he famously talks about the whole. I can't even remember the exact quote, but it involves the famous timey-wimey line that you'll see at conventions and hear people talking about and all that. And there's T-shirts, so it's a similar kind of an idea to what Sam is dealing with here.
So the real question is, I'm going to save that for you for later.
okay.
I don't want to give you too much at once. the one thing that you mentioned that I think you're going to actually, you may come to love as I do, is there's a real good scene where he's, I think it's not long after he's, it's after he's crashed, his wife's been taken to the hospital, and he's in the truck being, with one of his medical guys is riding with him to the hospital to see his wife, and Al is there, and Al's asking him questions, and the medical guy is asking him questions, and he's answering Al's questions, but the medical guy is taking them as the answers to his questions.
Yeah.
And it ends up being like pretty clever writing.
I did like
that. Make a scene like that work.
Yeah. They do several neat tricks. They'll have conversations like that are very clever, very well done. And they'll do the visual things where he looks in the mirror or says something. Those are really hard to pull off convincingly, so I'm glad they've only done it a couple of times. But it's neat how they do various things from time to time to remind you that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. They don't go too over the top with Al being a hologram. He's going to walk through something every once in a while just to remind the audience it's a hologram. But they don't do it too much. The only thing I always kind of found annoying about that is they always use that little sound effect, that little ding sound effect. I'm like, okay, we get it. He's a hologram. I think they use it every time Sam looks at himself in the mirror to see what he looks like in that time.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Okay.
Yeah, just wait till you get to episodes where he doesn't necessarily jump into the body of a man.
Oh, dear.
So there's more fun to come on that.
Hey, now.
So that's pretty much the Air Force episode. Then it rolls real briefly, as we said, into the baseball episode.
Yeah.
Which
just an excuse basically to let him do the thing with his dad, right?
Yeah, it pretty much was. And it brought a little levity to the end. I really liked how he was their baseball team was sponsored by a funeral home.
Yeah.
and the announcer's like, when you come to that final out in life, do you pop out, ground out, or fly out? Keep in mind that you can always use so-and-so funeral.
Nice.
And I was like, you're going to get a lot of it. There's going to – and to me, that's the beauty of this show. There's going to be moments where I'm going to want to sit and bawl like a baby. There's going to be moments where I'm going to stand up and cheer. There's going to be moments where I'm just going to laugh. and that's the beauty of the show. So it's endless potential. It's endless potential of stories that he can leap into. This show could have gone on forever. That's probably why there's a fairly successful book series that came out after it. But anyway.
Right. I did see
the only really other thing I have to say about baseball episode I have two things to say on it. One's just kind of a neat trivia note. That big left-handed baseball swing that he does, it's going to end up being in the pre-credit sequence of every episode, I think, from now on. he hates that. Scott Bakula hates it. Because Bakula doesn't bat left. They wanted him to bat left because they were doing a nod to The Natural.
Oh.
Like I said, they do nod to a lot of movies in the show.
Okay.
And so they want him to bat left like Redford did in The Natural. And he doesn't bat left. So he's like, every time I see that swing, he goes, I just know professional ball players are just laughing at me. And on the flip side of that, I just want to say to Scott, I was like, Scott, it's important to the story that you strike out.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that your swing looks
You're not
bad.
Supposed to be a great baseball player. Right.
You're not supposed to hit the ball, Scott.
Right.
So it's okay. But yeah, I've seen him on some interviews. He absolutely hates it. the only other thing that I want to point out, and you do this for me on Babylon 5, so I want to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quote at the end of it, of the end of that episode. I think right before he leaps out of the baseball thing. Well, I can't remember if he says it to Al or if it's in her monologue, but he says, who knows what I can accomplish before I'm done with this.
Okay.
And that's going to be kind of important.
I see. Okay.
So just put a pin in that.
So he does think that he's doing some good, and that he's you know, right now he's in no hurry to get back because he feels like he's out doing some good things.
And he's out doing some good, and that's a big reveal to his character.
Yeah.
And without giving away too much, a lot of what happens to him and a lot of what's going to happen to him is based on his own character.
See, because I'm thinking if I had wound up with that Mickey chick, I might have just said, "All right, I'm done leaping. This is fine."
Like I said, I don't have a perfect memory of this, but I know there's an episode coming where he does fall in love with a woman. It's just like, I'm just going to stay here. there's some stuff. So that's my notes on part one.
All right.
How about this before we go to the break? Kind of like our James Bond episode. How about you give me your two favorite things about the pilot and two things that just left you scratching your head?
Well, I guess to scratch my head as easy as just that, like I said, I was hoping for a little more complete explanation up front, and I was kind of puzzled. And then I did feel like it kind of dragged on a little bit. I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. Let's get on with this. But again, once it got to the end of the pilot of the Air Force part and got to the baseball, it kind of picked up. But I mean, what I like is, you're right. I mean, the characters are very likable from the very beginning, and the stories are clever, and I like that they're diverse, right? I mean, I like that you just go, they're nothing alike. I mean, we've had the four I've watched so far. You had the Air Force and the baseball, you had the college professor, you had the boxer and the cowboy, so a veterinarian. So that's a real nice eclectic combination, and I'm sure it's just going to get more from there. So
it really will. It really will. So that's episode one.
That's episode one.
You can throw it to the break, and we'll come back and talk briefly about, well, it's episode one and two.
Yeah.
We'll talk about three and four. We'll go into Star-Crossed, and then we'll go into The Right Hand of God.
Right. So I want to make sure that our Patreon supporters know how much we love them. These shows are produced, and the videos and the comics and everything that we're doing are produced in large part thanks to you guys. You're certainly carrying your share of the load and beyond. And I want to, of course, point out our great sponsors so far: Nicholas Cottrell, Bill Matthews, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Michael Kirshner, Joey Miller, and Dave Powell. You guys are awesome, and we absolutely value you. And anybody else out there that's listening, I'm not sure if this – I think this show will go straight to the White Rocket Entertainment feed, but we do some shows that are exclusives that you get to hear as much as a month or two early via the Patreon page if you are a member. We have some shows that the very bottom tier, all you got to do is get in on the very bottom and you can get them. Others, you might be a little higher tier to get the top quality material. But all you got to go to Patreon, Patreon, patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. It's really the White Rocket Patreon. I probably should go back and just rebrand it as our company, but I had it set up for me. But all the money I get in it just goes right back into the company. That's what I do with all of my money, is go right back in.
Told me you were putting it in a cruise fund.
yeah. Only if it's a working cruise, I guarantee you that. It all goes right back in. So yeah, go to patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. And, of course, you can reach me on easiest way on Twitter is @Van Allen Plexico, and Jared is @YardSaleArtist. Let's see. We've got one other quick word here, and we will come back in just a second.
Hello there. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist, with a quick podcast promo for my show, Comics with Normies. Here's how the show works. Using my yard sailing skills, I acquire a random comic book from a yard sale. I then give said random comic to a normie, a normie being a person who doesn't normally read comic books. Then, on the show, I'll sit down with the normie to discuss the issue, get a real outsider's point of view, and see what some of the comics that we love, and maybe not love so much, seem like to those normal folks we see walking around on the streets each day. It should be a fun perspective and good for a few laughs. You can check out the Comics with Normies podcast, along with some other fun-filled podcasts from White Rocket Entertainment, on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. And feel free to join the show using the Twitter handle @NormiesPodcast or on Facebook @ComicsWithNormies. Once again, you can find Comics with Normies on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. We'll see you there.
Okay. So, Jared, let's get the last two episodes for this week. Let's talk about them. What's the next one up?
Next one up is called Starcross. These will probably go a little faster because we had a lot of, you know, basic stuff to talk about in Quantum Leap. Before we get started, though, as you were giving Patreon shouts at the beginning, I want to do real quick. I put a call out on Twitter and Facebook for anybody that had any questions or comments about this episode.
Yeah.
Or not this episode of Quantum Leap, but this podcast episode. Talked about how we were going to do Quantum Leaps 1 through 4. And just got a few feedbacks I just want to read out real quick. On Twitter, we had the Chief. Just Chief, he commented with "Oh boy," which if you watch the show, you might have figured that out already, Van. That's kind of like the tagline. That's something that Sam will start to say almost every time he pops into a leap and kind of trying to figure out what's going on. He says, "Oh boy."
Okay,
that's kind of his catchphrase.
I'll look for that.
Drendryu, which if you spell that backwards is weird nerd. I'm on to you, Drendryu. gave it 22 hearts. Just 22 heart emojis. and now that we've had this conversation, when Magnus NP shared with us a GIF of Sting from Dune, I was like, what in the world does this have to do with Quantum Leap? Now I know. Thanks, Van. and then on Facebook, we actually got a actual words quote from a buddy of mine, Aaron Head Moss. Sometimes I guest appear on his G.I. Joe. He calls it a headcast. He said, I love the show. It's truly fantastic, and he wished us luck in covering it. So thanks, Aaron Moss.
Good recommendations there. That's cool. So let's talk about the college professor. This was probably my favorite episode so far. There's a lot of it that, again, I felt was a little draggy. I feel like I kind of wanted to get going with things. But this was probably overall my favorite one, and it may be in part because I'm a college professor. But I really enjoyed.
You really identified with the character.
Yeah, and so boy, I don't know about that.
Oh,
you said
oh boy.
Oh gosh. So talk to us a little bit about that one.
Okay, Starcross. Real quick plot summary. Man's got it. He leaps into the body of a college professor, an aging, I think, kind of alcoholic, weather-beaten professor who's basically sleeping with his students. And he quickly realizes that he's a college professor at the college where his one-time fiance was, and he sees her there.
And that would be Terry Hatcher.
That would be the very lovely pre-Lois and Clark Terry Hatcher.
Yes.
He sees her there, and this – again, they jumped into this early, basically being the second or third episode, however you want to look at it. They jumped into – this is, as I mentioned before, this is one of those more – poignant from Sam's life episodes. He's going to be leaping into some places that have to do with his personal life with a tad bit of regularity, which will give you a little bit more of a hint as to what's going on.
He
leaps into that, and this is one of those first episodes too where basically Ziggy's saying, hey, you're here to keep this college professor from marrying the student of his. It's going to ruin both their lives. She really needs to go marry this meathead jock from Ohio State who's a wrestler.
Right.
And but he says, no, you know, this is – I'm here to get a second chance with her. And so he kind of goes on his own quest to – we find out she basically left Sam at the altar. He thinks he can fix that by repairing the relationship she had with her father. So he gets the two of them together to work some stuff out.
Yeah. But the kicker is, and it's awesome, which I really thought was cool, was that because he repairs a relationship, she ends up marrying somebody before him.
She probably does. Yeah, that's they do talk about that. And then
that was great.
This is one of those episodes where Ziggy was right. He does not leap until that redheaded gal that was crushing on him actually kind of has a moment with her meathead boyfriend, and they kiss, and then he leaps.
And it kind of turns that in a way that kind of turns into. Back to the Future in a way.
Yeah, a little bit.
It kind of reminded me of that. So it was kind of cool. It was neat because it had echoes of Back to the Future. Plus that big dude was just really a cartoon character. It was almost like Revenge of the Nerds in a way. And then you had Terry Hatcher. But again, like I say, I love the idea that if he doesn't interfere, she runs away from him. And if he does interfere and fixes her problem, then she marries somebody even before him because now she doesn't have that problem. So
right.
It's a really clever construction there. I like that.
They did good on that. And I like this episode too because it kind of right out of the box after we sort of had the heavier – first episode, this one jumped right into, we're going to do a lighthearted one. Yeah. And even though this is this is a poignant one because it has a piece of Sam's actual history in it with his original
right.
fiance.
Right.
It's a very funny episode.
Well, another thing. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say there's a lot of laugh out loud moments in it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I really like about it, too, is that in this episode, he's a totally unsympathetic character that he's jumped into. So he's having to try to persuade these young women of doing things when everything about him says, run away from me. I'm a horrible, lecherous old drunk man. You know, I mean,
yes.
it's like a huge handicap on him. He'd have a hard enough time trying to get them to do what he needs them to do if he was like, you know, some upstanding citizen. But he's like the last person they should ever listen to and believe about anything. And he's got to get them in his car and drive them places and get them to fall in love with people. And you would never, you know, take a candy bar from this guy. So, It's pretty clever. I thought it was very, very clever.
It is a testament to how Bakula plays, I'm burying my soul and I'm being very genuine. And that's how he's going to jump into more than one role where he's not a great.
Yep. We lost you. Do your mute thing. Hello. Hello, chick. You're back.
Check. 1, 2, 1, 2.
You're back.
Okay. Anyway, I was just saying he's going to jump into a lot of characters. Well, not a lot, but a few here and there that aren't great people. But the genuineness of Scott Bakula's acting on this character, well, it'll win people over, as you saw in the episode.
Right.
But I thought it was a very funny episode. I mean, right from the get-go, he realizes he's in the 70s. He's like, bell bottoms, you know, plaid shirts, and English lit. My three maybe, least favorite things.
Maybe that's another reason why I liked it. It's in the 70s. One of my favorite, least favorite decades. That's cool.
He drops a slam on English lit right from the
right
get-go.
Right on the start, yeah.
And then pretty much all the humor, I thought, and you'd have to.
You're gone again. You're gone again. Can't hear you. Got nothing. Hello. You're back. Nope, you're in and out. You're back.
Check 1, 2, 1, 2.
You're back.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
I think we're in prime time internet usage. And so boggy connections. Anyway, you just have to tell me about if you found it as amusing as I did, but just about every scene with that redhead gal, her name was Jamie Lee.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Very entertaining.
Laughing so hard.
Absolutely. Very, 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 very entertaining. She was a little bit annoying, but for the most part, I thought she was very entertaining. So
she comes on like super strong and annoyed. And one of the first things that Sam says, and he delivers the line so well, like under his breath, he just goes, I want to go home. I don't want to be here.
Well, that's one of the first things I realized from it, depending on the episode, is that sometimes it's really more like a cartoon. I mean, the characters, the funny characters are more cartoonish because, I mean, because they really just chew the scenery. I mean, Terry Hatcher and her dad and everything is a very straight up drama almost. But the, but the wrestler guy and what's her name? The redhead or whatever. They are absolute cartoon characters. They're not supposed to be realistic. They're there right. for laughs, and they're there to make him uncomfortable, and they certainly do. Let's roll on into the last one here.
All right. I want to make one quick point on the previous episode. Is the first of another theme that we'll see where he will be involved in some very high-profile historical events, like this one was centered around the Watergate Hotel.
That's right. Yes, that was cool. And yeah, and he ended up basically finding the unlocked door or whatever. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. No. Oh, that's unbelievable.
And that led to a great line, too, where Al was explaining it to him, and he was like, I don't remember this at all. And Al goes, Republicans would love you.
That's great. A little Forrest Gump going on there a little bit.
Yeah, it's very Forrest Gump before Forrest Gump. You're going to see a lot of episodes like that. But anyway, yeah, let's just roll into the last one, which
boxing
is
it, Boxing and Nuns.
Boxing and Nuns. The name of the episode is The Right Hand of God. He's going to mix it up with some nuns. He's going to fight them. Wait, no, I don't think that's what happened.
Well, it's the classic.
Now that's actually going to be kind of important. I'm giving you a little seeds here and there, but
right.
but the there is some amount of religious overtone to the whole show.
All right.
And it'll pick up more and more, but it's never heavy-handed. I think anyone can enjoy it.
Well, it's the classic trope of the boxer who's supposed to take a dive, but because it's Sam, he's not going to do that. He's going to do the right thing to try to help the nuns get their new church or whatever. And he's got his incredibly hot girlfriend, Mickey whatever, from We Got It Made. And I was so happy to see her. That's like the only two things she ever did in her career was an episode of Quantum Leap and that failed sitcom. But, man. But, yeah. So, I mean, this one was kind of tropish in a way. It was a lot of cliches. But it was pulled together in such a way that I liked it all right. I found some of the things tiresome in involving the nuns mostly. But... And again, you know, you're like, oh, he's got to go up against the gangsters and they're going to threaten him and he won't, you know, and all that. But it played out in a fairly original way, and I didn't dislike this one too much.
Yeah, I consider this a filler episode. And I mean, because of the nature of the show, they're going to have some of these because they can't do every episode can't be poignant about Sam's right. life, and every episode can't be historically important. They're going to do a few throwaways, right. And this is one of them. And that's what I was kind of saying before. Of the three that we're covering here, this one is probably the worst one. But it's like you said, it's still not a bad episode. It's entertaining. You know, it gets you through.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, I don't have a whole lot of notes on this because it's fairly straightforward. Like you said, it's basically mm-hmm. he's boxing for the nuns, and his trainer doesn't want to train him because he knows that he's a guy that takes the fall for the mob, but then. Because Sam is Sam, he's not going to take the fall, so he wins the trainer over.
Right.
I think what was neat, though, was the head mob guy that was paying him mm-hmm. to take the fall. Do you know who that is?
No, he looked familiar, but I couldn't place him.
He might look a little familiar because, you know, Dean Stockwell plays Al.
Yeah.
That's his brother.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. I want to say it's like Carl Stockwell. I might be off on that, but that's Dean Stockwell's older brother who's been in some movies back in the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
But yeah, that's who that is. Nice. And so that was kind of neat that that he was there. But yeah, it's a straightforward episode. It's one of those ones where Sam overcomes the odds almost miraculously.
Yeah.
Hint, hint. You know, hints along the way.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And with a little help from Al. There's always going to be help from Al with the boxing thing. I felt like there was a missed opportunity there. Or maybe there was something they meant to do. Because there was a scene where Al was kind of just hanging out in the gym by himself. And he seems almost sad about something in his past that has to do with boxing, but we're never going to really revisit that.
Oh, okay.
There's a scene where Sam has left and he's just kind of standing there, and you can tell he's got some kind of memory on his mind, but I don't think they ever revisit that. So I don't know if they just had to edit something or whatever. But yeah, it was a fun episode that, like you said, the blonde chick, what's her name? That blonde actress?
She played the Mickey. Her name, the character was Mickey.
But yeah, we're going to call her Mickey.
I can't. But holy cow.
She was very talented. She was gorgeous.
Yes.
She did some streaking.
Yes, she did. I like how not only do they get these nice-looking guest star actresses on, they get them undressed. I mean, she did streaking, and then the one we'll talk about next time with the cowgirl, she has heat strokes. Of course, he has her down to her bra lying on the couch. I'm like, dang, Sam, you just find an excuse to get all these women half undressed. It's unbelievable.
Sam's he's for the ladies, man.
Well, but he's got a good reason, though. See, he's always got a good reason. It's like you can't argue with him as you take your clothes off for him. You just are like, well, I guess that's what I'm supposed to do here. I'm like, dang, okay.
Well, it's very funny, sort of the dichotomy between him and Al. Like, if the roles were reversed, Al would be using this as every opportunity to sleep with every woman. There's no
in
way
history.
He would throw that redhead out.
Yeah. No.
He doesn't take the high road, but Sam, he's a high road kind of guy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, any last thoughts on that one, on the boxing with the nuns episode?
No, I think that wraps us up. That brings us to about an hour on this, and we got through the first three.
Very good.
Just glad that you like it. I felt probably the same way that you did, as you're kind of wondering, is Jared going to get into this Babylon 5 thing? Like we said in that episode, we've got two sci-fi shows here that I think are great, but way
different. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm just glad that you're jumping into my universe, I'm jumping into yours, and that we're both having a good time.
Well, and I'm glad that they're very different, too, because, I mean, if we were watching Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, it would be kind of like almost be repetitive almost in some ways, you know,
right.
compared to this, whereas this is so different that we get kind of a – you know, you do one for a little bit, then you do the other, and it kind of one cleanses the other, you know, from your brain a little bit. So it's very nice.
Yeah,
it's working well.
And I like that too.
All right. Well, let's wrap up for tonight. I'm looking forward to talking about, I've seen the first one of our next batch, so you can go ahead and make it such a way that I get the others, and we'll get on into that. And I guess in our next episode, we're going to be looking at 103, 104, 105, and 106 from Babylon 5, which will be Born to the Purple, Infection, The Parliament of Dreams, and Mind War. And there's two really classic episodes in there that I'm very, very fond of. So I can't wait to talk about those. We'll have a good time.
Oh, I think I thought I was caught up, but I'm not sure I've seen Mind War. I think,
yeah,
I need to get on that.
You need
I
to
know
see
I saw
Mind
the
War.
Other three.
You need to see Mind War, and then we'll be all set to go. So, okie dokie.
Oh, okay.
Well, I reckon the Rocket will get on out of here for another episode, and we'll be back soon to talk about those Babylon 5 episodes. So, thanks a bunch, Jared, and thanks for turning me on to Quantum Leap. It'll be fun moving forward with it as we leap from episode to episode.
I really think to give you an extra thing to do, you should put the leaping sound effect at the beginning and end of each one of these episodes.
I will see what I can do. Very good. All right, Rocket will get out of here for another week. We'll see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.